First of all, I would like to introduce myself. My name is Eileen Snell, and I'm from Holland, from the middle of Holland. And I'm here with my husband, Henk, and he is supporting me with the microphone the whole weekend. And, when I would like to tell you something about when my mindfulness experience started, it is a long time ago. When I was a late adolescent, I started to read about what mindfulness could mean in my personal life. I read some books. I did some effort to find a teacher, which I couldn't find at that time. In my family, we were not used to meditate, so I was kind of not really a black sheep, but no one did understand what I was doing. And when I was 25, I got my first son. And that wasn't very easy for me at that time because he was crying all the time, day and night, hour after hour. And so I got a little bit exhausted at that time. And that was the first time I really could experience with the day-to-day mindfulness practicing. So it helped me a lot at that time to be with him when he was crying and not thinking all the time what was going wrong with me or with him or with all kind of other things in the family at that time. So it helps me to stay really here in this moment. When he was crying, I was with him when he was crying. When I gave breastfeed, I was doing only that and not ruminating or thinking about all the things that went wrong. Sometimes I wondered, I must be not a good mother maybe, because why would he otherwise crying all the time? But well, sometimes it came up in my mind and then I realized, well, I don't know if I'm a good mother or not. We'll find out in the next, 50 years maybe. Now he's a very good surf teacher. So one of the things he taught me really was how to be a mother in the first place. And the second thing he taught me was how to learn to surf. And well, as you all know maybe, you cannot stop the waves, but you can learn to surf. And surfing is not a very easy sport. Who of you did ever surf the waves without sail? Yes. And what do you think? Is it a very easy sport to do? No, no, it's very difficult to keep balance. It's very difficult to stay on with your both feet on the bread. And he really taught me to do it. Well, I only, to be honest, I did it a few times. And but he taught me how to do that. So those two things I learned from him at the beginning. And we can learn a lot of our children. In Holland, I'm an MBSR teacher, especially for teachers in schools. I teach a lot of whole teams of teachers into the schools after a working day. For example, I go into the schools and teach them the 8-week program. And more teachers in Holland realize how much they need the mindful skills for their profession, because it's such a demanding job to be a teacher. And it's so important, I think, and really important for every teacher and also for every parent to be able to be present as you can, because every child feels when teachers are as present as they can. In fact, when we are asking children who are their best teachers, it's not about that they can teach so good geography or math or something else, but it's always about being in contact, always being present. And well, I think that's the most important thing for teachers as well as for parents, that we are able to be really here. As John Kabat-Zinn can say, it's so lovely to drop really into the moment. We don't have Dutch word for that, to drop into the moment, but in English it's a very good idea to do that regularly. So I teach teams of teachers in the MBSR courses, and I also teach a lot of kids in all kind of age groups. And when I started to do that, it was after some principals of schools had the MBSR training, the 8-week training. 12 principals of schools joined me in that course. And after, or in fact during that course, they said to me, well, this is so good for us. I can imagine, or we can imagine, that it could also benefit children enormous. And at that time, it's now, I think, 8 or 9 years ago, there was nothing for children developed at that moment. In fact, nothing in Europe was developed. There were no books. There were no child trainers. There was no information at all. The information I had came from America, and there wasn't also a kind of method. So they asked me at that time, after finishing the course, could you develop something for children? And that was a very interesting question, because I didn't even thought about that possibility before that question. And well, those moments are special moments in a lifetime, I think, when you get a question from someone and that changes, well, your whole life sometimes. Because I was giving mindfulness training for a long time, I think for 25 years already, but I did nothing really for children. The experience I had was with my own children. And that was very important. But to teach it really in a class setting, it's something else. So at that time when I got that question, I thought immediately, when I want to try this, when I want to develop a training for children, I have to learn it from the children. There's no one else that can learn me or teach me how to teach children than the children themselves. And so I went to different schools and asked them to invite me in their classrooms. And I was a kind of guest teacher. And so that was great that they wanted to have me. And then, well, I just started to begin with being mindful. What is being mindful? And well, most of the children never heard of the word mindful. So we call it in schools in Holland attention training, awareness training. And the word mindfulness isn't so easy in schools in Holland. People think very rapidly that it's a kind of sometimes religion, or it's only Buddhistic or that kind of thing. So we try to avoid the term mindfulness and call it attention training or awareness training for children. And then teachers and parents start to be more interested immediately. So I started with kind of information morning with the teachers and asked them what they thought about what mindfulness is, what attention is. And that wasn't such an easy question. And I found that out already also in my personal life, because my daughter, it's my second child, which I gave birth to 9 years after my surfing son. And she had definitely a concentration problem. And she was growing really angry to me also when I just said to her, just Anne, she's called Anne Marlene, and just concentrate, try to concentrate. And it's much easier for you to work, do your schoolwork. And then she said, Mom, I don't know how to do it. I'm just lost in how to try to concentrate. I don't know how to do it. And then I went to her school and asked to the teacher, how do you teach children to concentrate? And then they said, well, we don't. We just don't. We ask them to concentrate and to focus, but we don't teach them how to do that. And that was for me when she was 6, and she's now 27. When she was 6, that was for me the, also a kind of, well, point in my history that I realized the importance of mindfulness for children in schools. So when I gave those workshops in school time with teachers during lunchtime, most of the time I only had 20 minutes or something, I started always with the question, what is mindfulness? What is it? And I'm curious how many of you are familiar with mindfulness training or mindfulness exercises? How many of you are familiar with doing mindfulness practice? Okay, thank you. And when we would find out at this moment what mindfulness is, who knows a kind of definition of mindfulness? What is mindfulness? We have a microphone. Yes.
Well, traditionally, one hears it is awareness that is non-judgmental. I think it's like a friendly, freedom-giving presence. So there's the relational aspect, there's what's getting attention, and there's awareness and choice.
Yes, yeah. Yes, there is that friendly, non-judgmental awareness about your inner world and at the same time about your outer world. Yes, thank you. That's really true.
Would I also offer that it is about an understanding that we have a choice of how to show up and we have a choice about how to respond?
Yes. So it's also about being aware of our urge to react immediately and be able to stop, react immediately, and have a choice. That's also really important about the mindfulness skills. Is there another one who wants to add something? Yes?
To me, mindfulness means, I guess, the awareness or the ability to unconditionally observe the phenomena or the experiences or the events or anything in the present moment.
Yes, yes, that's true. Thank you very much. Yeah. Can I ask you something? What do you know? When you just let pop up what mindfulness means for you, is there something you could say about it? You want to say something about it or not?
Being kind and being aware and knowing what you're saying and
yes, being
thinking
kind
before you say things.
Yes.
And thinking how they will affect the other person.
Yes. Okay, thank you very much. That's very true. Great. So, well, when we talk about mindfulness, awareness, we always talk about this present moment. And it's not so easy to be in the present moment. Most of the time, our mind is keeping us away from the present moment. And, well, sometimes in a split second, we are completely somewhere else. Sometimes we even notice it at the first beginning. So I would like to do at this moment a very short awareness meditation with you. Sometimes I will use my paper because I am still a bit uncertain about doing this in a, for me, not very familiar language. So in Holland, I wouldn't take a paper, but here sometimes I need it. So sorry for that, but I hope you understand it. Well, let's just notice how we are sitting at this moment. When we try to be in this present moment and not to do anything else than just be in this moment, maybe you can be aware of how you're sitting now, without changing anything, without changing your posture or need to sit in another way. What do you notice about your sitting here? What do you notice about your legs, for example? And what do you observe about your back, your arms, your neck, your head? And then, when you observe your sitting position like this, maybe you feel that you don't sit so comfortable as you would like to sit. So I would like to ask you to change a little bit your posture now and try to make yourself as comfortable as is possible on this chair. Tomorrow we will sit some more on cushions. But at this moment, I would like to ask you to sit as comfortable as you can. And then direct your attention, your awareness to the movement of the breathing. Maybe at this point, you can point your attention to your nostrils and notice how the air is coming in and coming out again. And maybe you notice a slight difference in temperature, for example, between the air that's coming in and coming out. And then you can point your attention to your breast and stay for a while with the movement of the breathing in the chest. And what do you find out when you are sitting here in this space with your attention very close to the movements of the breathing, the breath? What do you notice now in this moment? Is the breath regular or irregular? Is it calm or not so calm? And you don't need to think about the breath, just be with the breath. And then you can let go your attention a little bit lower And go to the belly. And stay for a while with your friendly, non-judgmental attention, with the movement of the breath in the belly. This in-breath and this out-breath. And then try to be in this moment with the in-breath and the out-breath for a few more seconds. Without the urge to change anything or without thinking about breathing, just experiencing it. And when you hear the sound of the bell in a moment, you can just stop this exercise. So, about being in the moment, which was not so easy when I did this for the first time with children, but I did very well to start with. What do you find out about being in the moment? Maybe we can go on a little bit with questioning and doing a little bit inquiry, which we always do the same with children, and I will tell you something about inquiry later on. Who wants to tell something about his or her experience of those few minutes we just did this small meditation? What did you experience during finding out, for example, how your sitting position was? What did you observe about your sitting position? Is there something you did observe?
These chairs are very uncomfortable.
The chairs are very uncomfortable.
They really hurt my back.
Yeah. And what exactly did you notice about the chairs and in relationship to your body?
You want me to go into how they're designed?
No.
But the open back makes open it really back. Uncomfortable to,
okay.
To sit.
Yes. Okay. So
I was eyeing those little guys over there.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. And another?
These chairs are way more comfortable than the ones at school.
Okay.
That's second grade chairs at school.
Yeah.
I did notice that like my head was tilted to one side that I hadn't noticed before.
Okay.
And that there was my arms, I was actually had a little tension in my arms.
Oh, yes.
That I hadn't noticed.
Yeah.
And the breathing I thought was much softer than I would have expected my breathing to be at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Not as deep as I usually notice it to be.
Okay.
Just softer and more shallow.
Yeah. Okay. So all kind of different observations. And also a different opinion about a chair, yeah. And so there are a lot of different possibilities we can find out during, well, a few minutes of a meditation, yes?
Oh, I actually had the opposite. As I thought I was comfortable until I paid attention and realized I wasn't that. I wasn't uncomfortable, but I could be more comfortable.
Yeah.
And I also noticed I could get only like half a breath, not a full one.
Okay. So, yeah. So that's also interesting that some thoughts can give you the illusion that everything is okay and it's comfortable until you point your attention and your awareness to the sitting posture, and then you find out it's something else. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what mindfulness and awareness is about, finding out what is going on in the reality and not what we think about the reality. Yes. Okay.
I noticed the fly buzzing in my ear, which I really enjoy.
A fly?
Actually, there was a little fly buzzing around my ear at first.
Yeah.
And I like that because I've started over the years with meditation to notice when the bees or the flies start buzzing in your, mm-hmm. around your ears. And then it flew over here and it bit me a couple times, and I usually don't get bitten by them at all. And I really noticed that. But that didn't really bother me. So I noticed that.
Yeah,
it didn't really
yeah.
bother me because I was in such a calm and relaxed space.
Another, yes?
So that's interesting that Elizabeth mentioned that, because I always get bit by mosquitoes, but I never feel it. And as I was meditating or calming my mind, I felt it. Like I felt the light, like I felt it land on me, and then I felt it bite me. So that's the first time. And then I also realized, after I also assessed my comfort level, that the more I relaxed, and then you said, just be the breath, it's like I dropped the mind. Like mm-hmm. I'm not the mind, I'm not the body, and I just dropped away from that.
Mm.
So that was really nice.
Yes, very interesting experience. Thank you very much. Yes. So thank you for all your sharing. We will do that a lot during the coming hours, today and tomorrow. So when I started to do this meditation, a kind of adult meditation with children, they started to,
Squirm.
Yes, that also, but also, like this. What is the word for that?
Yawn,
yes, also. So, and, this is not interesting for us. So at that point, I thought, well, I need something else for the children to teach them how they can benefit from mindfulness and how they can meditate for a bit longer time than only a few seconds. And I realized that I needed a kind of metaphor that they could identify with. And then I had some sleepless months, I think three or something. And I'm a very good sleeper. So, and I was thinking about what kind of metaphor do I need for those children. They don't need so much theory about mindfulness. They need something that they can identify with and immediately know, okay, this is about what we are going to do. So after 3 months, I wake up Hank in the morning, and most of the time he's an early riser, but I think it was at 5 o'clock or something. And then I said to him, Hank, I do have the metaphor. It has to be a frog. And, well, he wasn't quite wake up at that moment, a frog, at this time in the morning, what's going on? But I realized that the metaphor of the frog could be very interesting for children, because when I started asking the children, what do you see, what do you really see when you see a frog? What do you see when you see a frog? What is the first thing you see when you see a frog? Anyone a clue?
Yeah. I see like a readiness.
A readiness?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, that's what kids also say. I see that he's ready to jump, to make enormous jumps. And that's what our mind is also doing. Our mind is capable to go away, far away from the body. In a split second, you can be in Turkey, or you can be on your last holiday, which was very nice, somewhere in Greece or in America, on a place you have been. And your body is still here, but your mind is going far away. Children can immediately understand when they look at a frog that the jumps the frog is making can be compared by the jumps their minds are making. And another thing when they look at a frog is that a frog can sit very still, very, very still, and don't move a thing. But he's not in a kind of trance when there is coming a fly and he's a little bit hungry. His large tongue picks immediately the fly out of the air. And so he's also aware of his surrounding. And so when he's sitting still, he is kind of aware of his inner world, but also the world around him. So he's hearing sounds. When you are going too near to the frog, he's jumping away. He's immediately notice it. And the third thing that children find interesting about the frog and mindfulness is that they can really observe very well the breathing of the belly of the frog. And sometimes it's breathing here, sometimes it's breathing here. But when they look at the frog, they can see the jumps, they can see he's sitting still and is aware of his inner and outer world. They can see the belly is going up and a little bit down, so they can observe it with themselves also very well. And there is that nice fairy tale about the prince and the golden ball. Do you know that fairy tale? Yes? It's about the princess that throw her ball into the water by accident, and then the frog has caught the ball. And, well, I have it here, but you have to do something to get your ball back. And, well, it was not just something. She had to kiss the frog. And, well, she didn't like that so much. And not only kiss the frog, but he had to sit next to her at a dining table in her palace. So, and that's also about mindfulness. We have to have some intentions. We have to do something. It's not growing from itself. We have to do something, and something not so easy too. To meditate every day, or to do some informal or formal meditations every day, you have to make choices for that. It's not growing on the tree. But when you do it, when you make a kind of appointment with yourself that you are having the intention to practice mindfulness during a longer time, then that transformation is also starting to come. And that's so beautiful in that fairy tale, I think, when the frog is changing in a prince. And that's what's happening when I tell this story to children, that when they are going to practice mindfulness, sometimes for a few minutes, sometimes for 5 or 10 minutes, then something will definitely transform and change. And that's what they really notice after a few weeks having this mindfulness practice in the class or in a private practice or in a hospital. They starting to find out that something is changing in their inner world, in their impulsivity, in their capability, thank you, to be more kind to themselves and to be more compassionate to others. And that are such big changes in a child's life. We have some schools in Holland where 750 children are trained in mindfulness, the frog method. Two teachers are training the whole school, and they don't need any bullying programs anymore because, well, the bullying has stopped. And without doing anything, it's just because of practicing the mindfulness in the schools. They start with it every day a few minutes, and then they do the whole program of 8 weeks, and then they go on with, well, practicing 5 minutes, frog meditation sometimes, compassion meditation, the safe place meditation. We will practice that also the coming days. So that's that transformation of the prince and the golden ball. And, well, as children sometimes say to me, well, miss, thank you very much for this training. I don't think you're aware of it, of this, but I think you gave me something for life. And especially the sentence I like very much, I don't think you are aware of it. It's so funny when they say that, kids of 12 year old, and then I get sometimes that little notes from them. I can open them when I'm home, not now, but because I'm very shy, so they don't allow me to open it where they are, at the moment they are with me. And sometimes those sentences are in those little letters. They're lovely. I always keep them for the rest of my life, I think. So this is a little bit the birth of the frog. Yes, that was necessary to go on with the training, because I realized when I started training children, I could not use the words I used for the adults. It was a complete other language I had to start with. And I also had to find out some stories. We had to do a little bit some more movement, mindful movements in the lessons. And then some parents came to me and started to ask me, well, you made this training for the children. Why don't you make something for us? And I didn't have the intention to write a book at all. It just happened a little bit to me, like that question of the teachers who asked me, could you develop something for the children? The parents asked me, well, when our children are in the classroom and they are having the mindfulness lesson, what can we do to support them at home? And then I thought, well, maybe I can write a kind of, well, little thing for the parents with the kind of the same exercises so that they can support the children at home. And I did that. And that was the birth of the book, Sitting Still for Parents, Sitting Still Like the Frog. And so that's a little bit the background of how this all happened before I was training children at all.